Thank you, Santosh, and I'm standing in for the person you see on the screen. It's one of the problems in my stage of my career. I really should be a clone, but in any event, quick quiz for you. How many people have heard of the top of flight flaw, not including the two people at the front here? Okay. I told you. Okay, the rest of you don't know. Okay. How many have ever performed a crouch and sight test? Nobody? Okay. I guess I'm going to go through a lot of material today. In some ways, this is my last presentation to APHA and possibly in the U.S. because I'm moving back to Canada. But in any event, I'm going to squeeze a lot in. Those of you who don't have e-learning, which means getting the presentation and the audio and everything later on, are in trouble. But you can get a PDF of the presentation, not with the videos, but you can get that from contacting me. Okay. I have nothing to disclose in terms of the usual relationships. A bit of history. I was born the week of a major crowd-related disaster in London, England, in 43. 173 people died, 92 hospitalized in a crush on a stairway going to a fallout shelter. And that set my career for the next 45 years. I became widely known as an expert on exactly that problem worldwide. In 67, while still an undergraduate in architecture, after a lot of other stuff, I was invited to join Canada's National Research Council, specifically to conduct and apply research on people's use of and safety in buildings. And for the next 45 years, I've been doing exactly that, although I left there in 1987. My early focus was on crowd movement efficiency during egress, especially on stairways, such as we see here. And then later on, I became interested in individual safety, such as this being demonstrated, a fall and a recovery from a fall, with some injuries, by the way. Whoops, don't want to do that again. Oops, I know what's going wrong here. You're seeing it too often. Okay. Crowd safety has been a lifelong interest, and I was active in the station nightclub fire that killed 100 people. We're seeing a crowd crush at the doorway there, which was the major source of, or the largest source of deaths. People crushed at the doorway. I can't go into details of what happened there, but it certainly movement of people and their safety generally has been a lifelong concern. Okay, so today I operate out of both the U.S. and Canada, doing cutting-edge research, collaboration, education of professionals, and service on about 15 committees, 8 of which I represent APHA. And in my Canadian work, I collaborate with the Canadian Public Health Association very intensively in both countries, by the way. So I've really become known as the nexus between the public health community and the safety standards field internationally. I work worldwide, by the way. So I'm still continuing efforts begun during the 1970s. Now, the epidemiological situation that sort of is the fire in my belly is this. Over the last 3 decades in the U.S., the stair-related injuries that result in ED treatment have doubled, whereas the number of fire-related injuries have been cut by half. I work in both areas, by the way. And we see that home-related stair injuries are growing very rapidly, particularly over the last 15 years or so, while non-home settings, you see at the bottom, have actually gone down slightly. And so we have a success story there, and because I've been working in that field since, particularly on that area since 1978 in the standards area, I can at least claim on my deathbed that I've had some success. But the real problem is home stairs. They are the site of these private injuries, unlike motor vehicle crashes, which are in public. And this is what I typically have to deal with in my investigative work. In terms of the epidemiology and the growth of injuries, cases increase of 127% between 97 and 2009 for the under 65 group, a lower increase of cases in the 65 and over group. Age-adjusted rates, 103% growth for the 65 group, the under 65 group, and 85% growth for the over 65 group. And of course, their rates are higher because of their vulnerability to injury. But look at this. We have the cases at the top, The middle is the rates for ED treatment by age, and the bottom we have hospitalization by age. Young adults have the same rate of ED treatment for steroid-related injuries as do people at age 75. Now, many people don't recognize that, but and also the curve for all falls is a U-shaped curve, vulnerability of young and old, whereas for stairs it's a W-shaped curve. It's a totally different phenomenon, and we have to treat them differently. Let's look at a little detail of the older adults. This is the trends I see in my remaining decade or so of being around, since I'm pushing 70 here. There will be a trend of these more severe injuries to younger adults, and there'll be growth in all ages. That's what we see. And so some conclusions just on epidemiology. We have to focus more on homes because that's where the risk is highest and is growing most rapidly. We have to deal with all age groups, unlike what CDC injury prevention does now with focusing only on the over 65 group. That has led to this kind of blinkered thinking, what they call framing in CDC injury prevention, whereas that's the tsunami that's coming down on us. And so the growth rates for the adults are, we have a doubling in 13 years for middle-aged adults. And so we have a real crisis coming along, and we should be focusing on that group in terms of our prevention efforts now. What about costs? Ted Miller, who I don't know whether he's at this conference, but he performed an update for me on his earlier published cost data. This is just for homes by first treatment, and you can see that doctor's offices and clinics account for a huge portion, $31 billion of the total $72 billion U.S. 2007 for home steroid-related injuries only. Currently, it's running around $90 billion for homes and add another $10 billion for non-home stairs. That's $10 million an hour, just to make it a little more manageable. The largest single factor in these falls is the geometry of the steps and their uniformity. That's called tread depth, run or going, depending on what country you're in. And because I work in Canada, and APHA's influence extends to Canada, we have a vice president for Canada, by the way, he's a good friend of mine. Canada has the lowest standards for this step run dimension, just 210 millimeters, roughly 8 inches, compared to 8 to 11 inches for the rest of the English-speaking world. So we have stairs like this in new homes in Canada relative to an adult shoe size. And you can see the risk level increases drastically as the run, the tread depth is decreased. So those are various code requirements. Don't have time to get into it. The risk ratio is roughly 4 to 5 to 1 in the range we have in North America for home stairs. It's a huge range. And Canada and what the home builders provide in the U.S. are generally at the 4 to 5 times risk ratio relative to other home stair requirements in the U.S. So this is a huge ratio, but it isn't as huge as the other things I'll talk about. And this is the range of the best non-home stair requirements in the U.K., 300 millimeters, 12 inches, relative to 200 millimeters, 8 inches. So there's a huge difference in what you experience moving between public and private settings. Now, it's not just the individual step that's important, it's the context for that. So we have to look at the adjacent step geometry. Now, this is the top of flight flaw. The top step is larger because of the difference in the nosing projection between the top and the second step down. And so the top of flight flaw means the second step is smaller, usually by about an inch. And that increases the risk of a fall at the second or third step by 1, 2, or 3 orders of magnitude. 10, 100, or 1,000, in that range. That's based on empirical work I did in Canada decades ago. And here's this is the crouch and sight test. You basically see whether the nosings line up. If they don't, and you perform one more test, I won't talk about right now, it's very simple. 10 seconds, you can perform this test. And we see that this stair fails. Okay. Now, the subtitle of my talk today is essentially When Injury Evidence and Building Industry Policies Plus Practices Clash. It's clear there's a big gulf between what industry produces, particularly the home building industry, and what we know from research. And this is very sound research performed repeatedly internationally. And APHA has a policy on all this, 2009-13, which addresses the U.S. code-making bodies, two of them, one of whom has responded, one has not. The industry-dominated one has not responded. So this is an issue with implementation of our own policies. Now, until recently, the story of this relatively poor quality of U.S. and Canadian home stairways and ambulation falls generally has been largely blocked from presentation at conferences such as this one, and I'm not surprised at the small audience. I get much larger audiences in Canada and overseas than here. And Safe States and U.S. CDC injury prevention have prevented a lot of presentations. I won't go into too much detail on that, but it's essentially suppression of the information, in my view. And that includes very limited participation from the U.S. generally in the World Conference Injury Control, where we had a one-day workshop on all of this, ambulation-related falls, which was carried by Webb worldwide. No one from CDC participated except in the last hour one staff member dropped by. But nobody participated by Webb. And the participation rate in Canada was about 100 times higher than the U.S., even though it was very, very low cost to be a participate by Webb. Okay, so some of the impediments are essentially this blinkered approach, which is basically focused only on over 65 age group. And while this could be rationalized for falls on floors, it doesn't apply to stairs. And we see the data here for that again. There were two influential things happened this year. One was just 3 weeks ago, the Lancet paper by Robinovich et al., which used video records of falls, only the second time that had been done, both cases in Canada, by the way. Canada leads the world with this work, with the research on surveillance of falls. But even in that paper, in that learned journal, along with another paper in the same journal, did not use the term missteps, although that's the ergonomic term for the precursors to falls. And I'll talk more about that in a second here. All of this was published, by the way, in 2005 in the ergonomic literature. And yet the fall prevention community and public health seems totally unaware of this, that there's been a whole science of missteps and fall terminology and etiology as well. Here are the misstep types. There are basically six. And we're only dealing with, in our title, only two of them, slips and trips. But there's air step, heel scuff, overstep, and understep, which are far more prominent for stairs than are slip and trip, by an order of magnitude or two at least. So an air step is stepping into an unexpected depression or step down, such as we see here. And here's the most famous one, the President Castro air step. Interestingly enough, even the Becker and Chiari article in The Lancet recently did not characterize this, although it discussed it, as an air step. The language was very vague, and that you wouldn't expect that in a first-rate journal like that. They didn't have a clue as to what they were talking about, basically, to put it very bluntly. Here's the other one, or sort of one of the other ones, the heel scuff. This is the only one that leaves a mark. You can physically see that there has been a heel scuff on many of these stairs. Here's a very prominent example from a restaurant in Boston. Look at the heel scuffs, both the marking and the scuffing. This is thousands and thousands of data being committed by people. And yet, the restaurant and anyone who comes there, except for myself, is almost oblivious of this. Extreme danger, by the way. Here's an example. You're seeing a high-speed video playback of people evacuating down the stair you see on the right. Look at all the scuff marks on that, particularly near the middle, where there's a landing. The first step below the landing has the most extreme marking. If I can find the cursor here, it's right there. And the people getting this on e-learning will see that cursor there. Another one, overstep. This is the one that leads to the most serious injuries on stairs. It's the most common, probably the vast majority of falls on stairs result from an overstepping misstep. And of course, tread depth is very important. That's the typical sequela from an overstepping misstep. You pitch forward. In that case, that was me falling there. I sustained back injuries. I didn't get the concrete sandwich in my mouth, but at least I saved myself from falling onto that concrete stair. I would never do that again, by the way. I was a young, foolish man at that point. That was 1984. National television in Canada. Understep. I had one of these overseas a couple of years ago, and sustained injuries. I didn't think before that fall that it was a very serious kind of misstep. Now I've changed my mind on that. Here's some other video clips. The first fall you're going to see, not fall, the first misstep you're going to see on the right side, just takes a while to load here, is it was a glitch in the video. But essentially, there was an example of an understep, and the boy has something approaching an understep there on the left side. Now, slips. We'll get to the two that are named in our title today. We all know what a slip is. It's essentially insufficient friction between the foot and the supporting surface, and we have a sliding sequela from that. Very often occurs during heel strike, as you see here, for a normal bipedal gait. But look at the gait here. We're dealing with a non-elderly gait here, so it's a very wide stride. And you're more likely to slip as a younger adult than you are as an older adult. And the literature doesn't recognize that for the most part. Here's an example of a video of a slip which occurs due to contaminants, leaves, and water on a wood surface, which is a dangerous combination. It's just like walking on ice. Okay, trip, finally, the last of the missteps I'll discuss very briefly. Essentially, the foot during the swing phase contacts the surface obstruction or protrusion. On stairs, it could be this, or it could be as seen here. I do a lot of field work. I work in the field. I don't work laboratories, and I don't do telephone surveys. I'm sorry about that. But I wish I could. Maybe someday I will. But I look at people in the field. And here's an example of my work from 1987. I was observing this public event, and the people going up the stair, 1 in 16 was tripping at one particular step. I diagnosed it from 30 feet away, and because I was involved with the person who built the stair, we rebuilt the stair during the event in the course of a half hour. And we replaced the one step, which is the one, if I can do the cursor on here, it's that one. And it's this one here on the right. And then the flow was resumed. The misstep rate changed by 3 orders of magnitude from one intervention. Now, I call that pretty good field research. It's been published a couple of times in passing, by the way. Okay, we need a lot more attention to not only etiology, but some of these real-world interventions we get through codes and standards, because I'm the only one doing that work professionally, full-time, so to speak. And we have to do a better job of looking at falls and missteps, where they occur out in the field. And as I said before, a lot of my attempts to present this information have been suppressed in the U.S., but not elsewhere. I can talk about it anywhere around the world, but not in the U.S. So I have some serious indictments of the public health community involved with fall prevention. They really should open their eyes to the world of falls and the world of missteps in particular. I have a high regard for the moderator today and for my public health mentor, Sue Baker. She's been extremely supportive of this built environment work that I and others have been doing. But we have to stop focusing only on older people, and we have to pay a lot more attention to actual misstep and fall mechanisms. And again, the U.S. is an absolute laggard in this field relative to Canada. And there's these two events that have happened this year. I mentioned one, the Lancet paper from 3 weeks ago. In March, the pediatrics paper and the related NBC Today show. How many people saw the Today show piece in March, on March 12th, on stairs, stair-related falls? Yeah, you really must see it. That's the link. I'll show you the link at the end as well. It's readily available. Gary Smith and his colleague Tracy Meehan were involved in front of camera. I was behind camera on that particular program. But as a result of that one five-minute piece, widely viewed, consumers were in a better position to understand a few key stairway safety features, step geometry, handrails, and safety gates, and related fall scenarios, the etiology, than are many professionals focused on fall prevention programs in the public health field. That's a damning indictment of how badly informed are many of the professionals, relative consumers now. Okay, Canada has been leading in this area both in terms of the field work and in terms of the application of findings, particularly at the Toronto Rehabilitation Institute, which I work with. So, as I said before, today may well be the last time I speak on these topics within the APHA conferences. I've become very disillusioned about the public health field in the U.S. and its openness or lack thereof to professionals like myself without an MPH. And In Canada, public health professionals are much more involved in collaborative work with myself and others, and so that's why I am moving back to Canada. I'm halfway there already by having one home there now. To my U.S. colleagues, I wish you well. I despair with CDC and HUD, in particular HUD, and on this problem that's currently costing about $10 million a year. And it's not only an issue for older adults, as I've said. So some of this work is going to require environmental regulation, and I've got a lot of experience in that, and as well as the etiology and epidemiology. We cannot continue down the same narrow path we're currently treading, and depending on events occurring shortly next week, we may have no choice in this matter, and you will want to listen to people like myself who take no federal funds. I do not take federal funds or any other government funds. We may have no choice in the matter of pursuing this, and then we will have all fallen down. I thank you very much, and there's that link again for the... a lot of my work is on that website. It's not my website, it's the Toronto Rehabilitation Institute website. It's the only website devoted to stair usability and safety, and it is a non-commercial website, so I'm being non-commercial here. And as I told Santosh, I've run out of time, as he knows, and I will take questions and discussion at the end. Thanks a lot.